Today on Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel.
I managed really big rappers, 2 Chainz. I built one of the biggest recording studios with my business partners, and we built one of the most innovative management companies in the world. Making money and being a successful manager wasn't my dream. I've been 300 pounds. My health was really bad, and it had been for a long time. Come to find out, I have a brain tumor. I walked away from the music industry. I would write down in my notebook every day, I'm going to be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. I'm writing my dreams down. And we made a fan-made Nike commercial. 3 days later, Nike calls me. They said, Charlie, we are going to change the direction of our company because of this film. And so in this time, when all my dreams came true, my heart said, go help kids with cancer. I sold 3 of my 4 houses and started giving all my money away and started going across the country, and we're making dreams come true.
And how did you pick the kids that you were helping?
The ones that needed a miracle. There was this little girl named Lila. She loved pigs, and she made little pig cookies. We sold 200,000 cookies in 48 hours. She made $500,000, was able to afford her treatment. I believe somebody's dream is the answer. This is the best thing that happened to me. This is a winning streak.
Every once in a while, someone walks into my studio and completely changes the energy of the room. Not because they're loud, not because they're trying, but because they embody something the rest of us spend our whole lives searching for. That's what it felt like when Charlie Rocket sat across from me in my Boca studio. Charlie is one of those rare humans who doesn't just talk about dreams, he lives them. He protects them and he creates them for other people. He's the force behind the Dream Machine Foundation, the man who literally travels the country in a dream wagon, making wishes come true for kids and families who need hope the most. He shows up in communities where nobody else is showing up. He gives people moments they never thought were possible, and he does it because he believes in one thing above all else: dreams are medicine. But what makes Charlie extraordinary isn't just what he does for others, it's the story that got him there. Before he was known as Charlie Rocket, he was a successful music manager who was overweight, sick, and burnt out. Doctors told him the path he was on would kill him, but instead of accepting that, he made a decision, a dream, that he wanted to be an athlete. Not someday, not when it made sense, not when people agreed it was realistic. He declared it when it sounded absolutely insane. And then he did the impossible. He transformed his life. He became the athlete he said he would be. And that crazy dream took him all the way to starring in a Nike commercial with all the biggest athletes in the world. That's the thing about Charlie. He doesn't chase logic. He chases magic. And in this episode, he breaks down exactly how he does it. How he dreams, how he manifests, how he stays committed, how he turns visions into reality, and how he helps other people do the same. If you've ever felt stuck, if your goals feel too big, if life beat you down and you forgot you're allowed to want more, this conversation is going to hit you right in the heart. Charlie gives real tools and real mindset shifts that make you feel like anything is possible again. Because when Charlie talks, he's not motivating you, he's activating you. Meeting him in person and feeling that presence, that purpose, reminded me why I do this show. It reminded me how powerful one person's dream can be, not just for themselves, but for the world around them. This is one of the most uplifting, inspiring episodes I've done, and I know you're going to love it as much as I did. So here's my conversation with the incredible, unstoppable Charlie Rocket. Thank you so much for joining me. It is such an honor to meet you in person.
Thanks for having me.
So I found out about you by social media, and I remember like a year and a half ago seeing some stuff you did with your dream team, Dream Machine, mm-hmm. Going from place to place, making wishes come true for mm-hmm. people. And I found, like, it was an interesting thing. My relationship with social media was not one where I would start to tear up or cry. But when I saw those videos, it really hit me. I'm a huge fan of the underdog. I'm a huge fan of, changing people's lives that feel like they're in a place of helplessness or they don't see an upside to where they are. Kids with cancer, kids that really are suffering, and even adults, too, that just are having a really shitty life at this point, you know, and just need someone to believe in them because usually they're just passed over. And I feel like that's where I first heard of you. And that's when I was like, I like this guy and I love what he's doing. So for people, you know, that scroll mindlessly on TikTok, Instagram, whatever, those are the kind of messages that I think really stand out and are good reasons for people to know what other people in the world are doing. So I just wanted to start with that.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
So I want to know, because you have done so many things. You have so many names. You've been, you know, featured in so many things. But I want to start with telling people, like, who you are not as the guy that we know. Like, where did you come from? What kind of family did you come into? How did you get into wanting to make a difference?
First of all, I'm a dreamer. Somebody asked me earlier before the podcast, they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, I don't really know how to explain it because I pretty much will do anything I dream of. So I'm not ever in a box. Like, I was in the music business and I won Grammys, and then I wanted to be an athlete, and then I became a Nike athlete and won Emmys, and then I want to be a philanthropist, and I built one of the most popular nonprofits in the history of the internet. And I want to have a coconut water company, and I want to do this, and I want to do that, and I just do everything I dream of. But who am I? I'm a guy who tries really hard. I don't specifically have a talent. I didn't come from a rich family. If I have a superpower, it's my delusional optimism. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like my little secret sauce of how I achieve a dream.
Right.
Because I fall, I fail, I get fired, I struggle.
Yeah.
I've had a brain tumor. I've been 300 pounds. I'm in no way this guy who just accomplishes stuff. But I do accomplish, but I usually go through a very human experience first. I just have a gift of overcoming problems.
Right. So I want to unpack all of that. But just so I know, when you were a kid, did you struggle a lot? Were you a mm-hmm. happy kid, sad kid? What kind of family did you grow up in?
So I grew up in a family of vacuum cleaner salespeople.
Okay.
So my parents are really inspirational to me
yeah.
because they never made more than $40,000 a year combined.
Okay.
But both of my parents became millionaires.
How?
Well, a couple of things. Saving money, mm-hmm. for one. They never spent it. They invested. And they would buy houses for $20,000, $30,000. They would take every penny they made. And we wouldn't even turn the heat on in the wintertime. I grew up in Atlanta.
Wow.
And it gets cold.
They really saved.
They saved and they invested. Mm-hmm. And just one of the properties they bought when they got divorced when I was 18, one of the properties was $1.2 million. Another property was $400,000. Another property was $300,000. And it's I got to learn how to almost be an alchemist. We don't have much, but we could turn it into an empire.
Mm.
And I've applied that in every business that I've started because I don't use money when I start my businesses, even though I'm successful.
Mm.
I always go this very grassroots, homemade method anytime I do anything because I saw my parents do it and I saw what's possible. So I grew up in Atlanta. My dad was a blues musician, sold vacuum cleaners. My grandfather sold vacuum cleaners. My mom sold vacuum cleaners. I sold vacuum cleaners.
And which one is the best vacuum cleaner, by the way?
I would say back then it was called Electrolux.
Okay. And do you use a vacuum cleaner now?
I do, yes.
What vacuum cleaner?
Electrolux.
Okay, love that. Okay, go on.
It's a very
Sorry.
Expensive vacuum cleaner.
Okay.
But I started seeing my friends at school make music, and my eyes lit up. And I was like, I want to be a part of this hip-hop thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was so cool. Hip-hop, I asked my mom if I could put a studio in my bedroom. And she didn't know what she was getting into, but every day after school, there'd be 50 kids at the house.
No way.
Recording songs. And I built a website.
Okay.
That was my vision. I was it's going to be this big hip hop website. And the next thing you know, I get a phone call to go on tour with Soulja Boy. And I'm his cameraman going across the country. I ended up getting fired.
What? Wait, slow down. First of all, how did you get that call? How old were you?
I was 18.
And you, okay, were you planning on going to college?
Well, my mom made me go to college because if I didn't, I would have had to pay rent.
Okay.
My mom was like that. Okay, you don't go to school, you got to pay rent. And I was like, all right, I'll go to school.
Okay, so before you go to college, you get a call from Soldier Boy.
No, I'm in college.
Oh, you're in college.
I'm in college. And I actually, my first year, I lost the scholarship that the state provides. Because I'm supposed to be a businessman. Right, Why am I at school?
Right. So you didn't go to classes and you lost the scholarship.
Yeah, pretty much. And I needed a miracle because I'm about to have to pay for school now.
Yeah.
And the miracle came. I got a phone call from Interscope Records.
But how did they find you?
Well, my website. So Soulja Boy got signed and he wanted a cameraman to do his world tour. And he liked me. I was like this media outlet. It was really cool. Like I was a cameraman. I had a media outlet. Like he was like, that's who I want to do all my coverage.
Got it. So there is importance to sort of putting something really iconic together in terms of like a website or a grounding spot so people can find you. I mean, people are always saying like, where's the best place to start a brand?
Mm-hmm.
Your website seemed to help you, it sounds like.
Yeah.
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 Okay. And then how were you making these relationships? Because you seem like you've become a relationship guy. You have come across some of the most influential people and they choose you for campaigns or to donate money to. So what do you think about relationships?
Relationships for me, like I'm a slow dancer. I'm not like a networker. I don't go to networking events.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been antisocial ever since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So like going to a high school party was like scary for me. Even like going to like the football game was scary for me because it wasn't my environment.
Right.
So I naturally just have like an anxiety. So I needed a way to interact with the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided I'm going to build a business. Because
mm-hmm.
if I build a business that solves a problem, then people can come into my world because I'm naturally good at interacting, but I'm only in kind of like my environment.
Yeah, where you're the expert.
Exactly.
Right.
So I liked building businesses so I could interact with people. So in high school, I built businesses and that was my way of.
So let me ask you a question because people listening will say, okay, well, I can figure out what I'm good at. But the problem is, you know, your parents tell you or society tells you, you got to finish high school, then you got to go to college and you got to study something and then you got to work and have some experience.
Mm-hmm.
So in your experience, it sounded like you were okay with just creating your own credibility.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that without getting the education and the life experience? Because you were young when you started working and mm-hmm. doing this kind of job at the beginning.
It's practice. Like you can practice at school and become smart. You practice for like 4 years and you get smart. You practice in business and get smart.
Mm-hmm.
Same difference. So for me, most businesses are eat what you kill.
Mm.
And so if you get really good at hunting, you'll be able to eat. So in my life, I never really gave people an option to have an opinion if I had a business idea.
Yeah.
Because of how I speak. Most people, they get frustrated with people having opinions.
Right.
Because of how they articulated it. I learned very early on that people are going to treat you exactly how you treat the situation. For example, when I managed really big rappers, if I went to them with an idea and I was like, I have an idea. Like, we're going to like try to go to the different radio stations and like talk to them. They'd be like, I'm not doing that because I sounded so insecure.
Mm-hmm.
Or like it was an idea. I sounded like I had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if I present to my artist, listen, this is what's going to happen. We're going to hit 30 radio stations. This is how many songs, this is how many spots we're going to rise on the charts. This is how much money you're going to make. And then the record deal will be about $1 million because we hit these radio stations. I didn't give them a chance to have an opinion because they're like, oh, he has it figured out.
Right.
So I learned this very early on, like with my parents or with my friends. If I have a dream, I'm going to speak it as if like I got this thing figured out. This thing's done. I might not know anything I'm doing, but I'm going to say it a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be like, this is what I'm going to do. I'll give you an example. When Soulja Boy fired me from being his cameraman. It's a pretty bad day in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm on the MARTA bus going back to my mom's house. I don't have any money. And I tell my mom, I think I'm fired. And she said, I'm so sorry. I said, no, like, this is the best thing that happened to me. She said, what? I said, Ma, like, this is a winning streak. She said, what do you mean a winning streak? I said, Ma, I was the lowest paid person on the team.
Mm.
Now, I'm about to be the highest paid person on the team. What do you mean? The manager's the highest paid person on the team, and I'm going to be the best manager in the world. She's like, what do you know about managing artists? I said, listen, I've got this camera. I've got this website. I know how to make my artists famous. Mm-hmm. That's what the best manager in the world would do. That's a manager's job, mm-hmm. to take them from nothing and turn them into something. I got to go to every radio station. I got to meet all the connects, and I got to be in every room. I'm going to be the best manager in the world. Mm-hmm. You think she had an opinion?
No.
I backed it up. Yeah. I spoke it. And she said, you know what? I believe in you. And my mom has always believed in me. But it's because I didn't say, I have an idea. Like, I'm going to, like, try to be. Like, I'm, like, brainwashing myself first. And it's so important to brainwash ourselves. And brainwashing sounds so bad. But, like, if your hands are dirty, what do?
You wash them.
And most of the times, our brains are pretty dirty with negative thoughts, mm-hmm. doubts, fear. That's our brain's job.
Yeah.
So, like, I've gotten really good at brainwashing myself and actually thinking each thing I want to do is going to be easy instead of hard. It's usually our heart that says, like, oh, I want something.
Right.
And then our brain's job is to be like, okay, what's everything that's going to go wrong?
Right.
And then we usually, like, get paralyzed.
Or how many steps does it take? And they get, you know, weirded out about it or like, oh, that's too much work, so I'm not going to do it.
Bingo.
Right.
I'm the opposite.
Right.
I brainwash myself, get rid of all the negative stuff, and I get my brain thinking, okay, this is going to be easy. I confirm it. I'm a cameraman. I've been in every radio station. I know how to do this. I just brainwash myself, and that's what gets me to show up, and that's what gets me to actually speak confidently. And the more I speak it, the more I believe it.
Right.
So you kind of like tell a lie enough times, you kind of start believing your lie. But this is a really good lie to tell.
Right.
Like, I have no proof if I'm going to be the best.
Make it.
A little bit, yeah. But like in the most positive way ever. Like, I'm going to be the best in the world.
Yeah. So you were managing some of the biggest names in hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
what did success look like? I mean, besides all of a sudden money was coming in, right? I mean, did you move out of your mom's house?
Yeah.
What was the first thing you did? Like, what was your life like? Because then I know you took a turn and got out of that life. So just tell us a little bit about it.
Success for me was acting like my parents. Mm-hmm. Every dollar I made, I bought a house. And then I bought another house. And I had a decent car. No, not like a Lamborghini. I had a nice Cadillac CTS. I had my image right. But I really liked investing. I bought stocks. I bought houses. And
did you know anything about real estate?
Yeah, through my parents.
Okay, you did.
You know, just like buy a house, you rent it out. Like, it's going to go up in value.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, so you knew that you could make some income off
absolutely.
Of okay, yeah.
So success for me was more about how great of a manager could I be, mm-hmm. not exactly the money. I built one of the biggest recording studios with my business partners, and we built one of the most innovative management companies in the world where we handled the merch for our artists. And the merch, we would have campaigns where my artists would do $2 million in sales in 3 weeks. And we would route tours, and we would shoot their music videos, and we would build their websites. And we had, I mean, we built a world-class organization. So for me, that's what success looked mm-hmm. like, not just making more money. I wanted to just do something nobody else did at that level of quality.
Let me ask a question. Do you think it's because you had outstanding artists that you did so well, or do you think it was just the business behind it, that you really made them?
It has to be.
Were?
It has to be both. I had a very unique skill set mm-hmm. At being able to see around the corner mm-hmm. of what's next. And it's a gift I've always had. Mm. I wouldn't know how to teach somebody that. But I think the beautiful thing with me is I don't look at somebody as who they are today.
Mm-hmm. You look at them at the potential.
I only see their dream. Mm. They might be struggling. They might be staying at their mom's house. They might not have a pot to piss in. But I don't see that version of them. And so that allows me to always keep my vision clear. I don't judge somebody where they're at today. So I'm able to find good talent, and we put a good business behind it, and we work our butts off. And we were very unique with how we operated mm-hmm. because when I first got into the music business, I had no money. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of money to break artists. Mm-hmm. And there was this one day in particular where my life changed. I took my artists to their show. And there were only 4 people there. And my heart was broken.
Wow.
And I said, I never want to feel this feeling again. Because for only 4 people to show up, I feel like I'm doing a terrible job,
right,
and nobody cares about my artists enough. We were good enough to have a show, but it was empty. And so I made a decision that day to run a play. And I was like, I don't have money, but I need my artists to be famous. So what I did at the time is MySpace. So what I did was I took the DJ for that show. And that DJ is in Cobb County, Georgia. He's like, all his like 10,000 followers on MySpace are from a neighborhood. So I messaged each and every person that followed him. And I added him as a friend and I left a comment. And I would do this for 6 to 8 hours a day. This is what I could afford to do. It was free. It just requires my time. Next thing you know, my artist is gaining popularity. See, I can boil a pot of water. It's very hard to boil a lake. But like this DJ and all the people in the neighborhood that follow him, they need to be at my show.
Right.
So I need them all to know my artists exist.
Mm-hmm.
So we're making personal connection. I started getting carpal tunnel syndrome, but something happened. Words started spreading, and then we would get hundreds and then thousands of friend requests a day. And what I would do for each and every friend request, add my group as a friend, I'd hit follow, I would go to their page, leave a comment, and I would do that all day, every day. And my group got to be the number one unsigned group on the MySpace unsigned top charts. And then I took that play, and when we started making money doing shows, we invested in CDs, and I would stand outside the clubs every night and pass out CDs. This is a play I can run every day. And when we had the number two song in the country, I'm still outside passing out CDs. And the DJ walks out of the club at 4 a.m, the last person to walk out. He said, Charlie, you have the number two song in the country. You're the manager. Why are you still passing out CDs? I said, this is my secret to success. Why would I ever change it?
Right. Wow. So at some point, you change, you get out of this career.
Yes.
Can you tell us why and what happened?
I was at my artist's house, 2 Chainz. Mm-hmm. It was Grammy week. And I go down, I'm in his closet, and I go down to pick up a pair of socks, and I passed out. And
had you been feeling sick?
Yeah. I mean, my health was really bad, and it had been for a long time. I was a binge eater. Come to find out, I have a brain tumor. And
So what happened in that moment? Did you get taken to the hospital?
So I went to the hospital.
Okay.
The next 4 days, the room is spinning. The world was spinning.
Yeah.
I couldn't make the world stop spinning. I called my mom. I didn't tell her what was going on. And I just told her to come out to California and visit me. I was just scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to be near my mom. And I made a decision that business and money and music, all of it was great, but it wasn't my dream. And I would have these dreams at night, literally in my sleep, that I like died. And my thought in my dream was that I never got to experience my actual real dream. I died before I got to experience my dream.
Mm-hmm.
Making money and being a successful manager wasn't my dream. I wanted to be an athlete, but I was always fat. So I obviously didn't chase that dream because I'm short, I'm fat, I'm slow, I'm white. Like, I'm not going to be a professional athlete. You usually chase a dream because you can make money doing it. But how can I make money being an athlete? And so I did the craziest thing anybody who's running a $15 million a year business would do. I gave my shares to my business partners and I told them I'm going to go chase my dream of being an athlete.
So now why? First of all, while you were in the music business, didn't you feel like that was succeeding and wasn't that a dream? Or in the back of your mind were you always like, I want something else? Or was it this epiphany you had when you finally got sick?
I mean, you can't get rid of your dream.
Mm-hmm.
It never goes away.
Mm-hmm. So as a kid, you always wanted to be.
That's all I ever wanted. I wanted to be an athlete.
Right. So tell me about a little bit about your brain tumor, though. I mean, how? I know you've reversed this brain tumor. How? I mean, there are plenty of people out there that are not doing well health-wise, and they will want some insight from you as to how you make that happen.
Well, the first time I was diagnosed with a brain tumor, I was actually in high school.
Uh-huh.
And medication was able to just knock it out.
Wow.
And it was under control for 11 years.
Okay.
Until I was 28.
Okay. So was it like stage one? How does that work?
No. It was benign, but it was very invasive.
Oh, got it. Okay.
It was wrapped around my eye. It was wrapped around the artery that goes into my brain. Wow. And it was there for so long that it started corroding the top of my spine. Mm-hmm. And it's inoperable. Mm-hmm. And so I asked my doctor, I said, would there happen to be any chance that it's how I eat that could be causing like an imbalance in my body? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, son, this just is a certain percentage of people get these brain tumors, mm-hmm. and this medication will work. I said, the medication's not working. I keep going back and back and back, and they keep upping my dose to try to get the mm-hmm. brain tumor to shrink. And then it started affecting my heart valves because I'm at such a high dose. Mm. And so I'm getting frustrated. I'm like, I have a brain tumor. Now the medication's affecting my heart. And you want me to be on this for the rest of my life. Is this because I'm so unhealthy? I decided to take things in my own hands.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, is this when you were 300 pounds?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I would binge eat like 15,000 calories in a night.
Wow.
And I would like only eat like my choice of like, is like it was an addiction. Mm-hmm. So I would eat like gas station like pastries, like Mrs. Field cookies or ice cream sandwiches. And I would eat like 30 or 40 different things. My stomach wouldn't get full. I would just, it was like ravenous. It was like I couldn't get full. I would almost eat so much to where I would want to make myself sick. Wow. To not want to do it again. It was like a real like.
Where do you think that stemmed from though? Was that part of your anxiety? You said you didn't like to be in groups of people. Was it just an addiction?
It was an addiction. It stemmed from dieting ever since I was 8. So dieting for me, being uneducated, was I need to eat less. Mm-hmm. And eating less for me was like breathing less. Mm-hmm. It's like if I were to hold my breath for long enough, when I'm done, I got to catch my breath.
Right.
And so I would starve myself.
That's a good analogy. Yeah.
And then I would like be so hungry and ravenous. But the problem was business was like triggering. So every part of business led me to my addiction. Mm. If I was stressed, it leads me to food. If I'm successful, celebrating, it leads to food. Mm-hmm. And if I'm having just business meetings, that's always with food. So I'm not cooking at home. I'm not even educated. So I don't know. I'm just trying to eat less, but then my business is triggering things and then the stress of it all. And then I just crack and I'm like, all right, I'm going to start again tomorrow. It was that vicious cycle my whole life.
Yeah.
I'd been running businesses since I was 11.
Wow.
So I was always under stress, and stress for me led to food. So when I walked away from the music industry, I moved to California. I went plant-based. I'm not plant-based anymore. But I just started eating real food. I got all the stress out of my life.
How hard was that to stop eating the cookies and the...
Wasn't hard.
Wasn't hard.
Because I had a very good why. I wanted to be alive.
Right.
It's not hard when you hit rock bottom.
Yeah. Well, so, and at that point, were they like, okay, maybe getting the weight down will help you with your health in general, but the brain tumor, or was it just like, I need to get this weight off of me?
Everything. I needed to heal mm-hmm. every part of my body. Mm-hmm. And
did you miss being in the music business, or you were over that at this point?
I still miss being in the music business because I'm really talented at uh-huh. what I did.
Do you think you'll ever go back into something like that?
No. Mm-mm. Okay. I love what I do too much. Now helping kids, but yeah, like it's hard for me to sit on the sideline and watch like the hip hop business struggle the way it's struggling when I know exactly what to do. So it's kind of like, I guess Michael Jordan like wants to go play basketball,
right.
you know? So
right. I'm curious if you were back in it though, what do you think has gone wrong and what do you think you would do to fix it?
Okay. Well, this is a great question. Do you mind if I nerd out?
No.
On the music side? So my philosophy with why hip-hop has lost its way is because hip-hop has lost its experimentation. Mixtapes used to be a thing. Mm-hmm. Artists would put out mixtapes, and they would be able to experiment rapidly with new sounds, new producers, new features. But now that everything streams mm-hmm. through Spotify, Apple Music, Now everything runs through the record label. And if an artist puts out a project and it doesn't do well, mm-hmm. first week sales, their career is over. So it's kind of like being a gladiator. Like imagine like two basketball teams and like they're playing each other. And if a team loses, like a firing squad comes and kills them. Mm-hmm. That's how it's like putting out an album today. If you sell 8,000 copies, your career is over.
Right.
When that first week sales number comes out and it doesn't do well, you're done. Mm. Record label shelving you, and the fans, they're like, oh, he fell off. Where back in the day, we used to put out mixtapes, and we put out lots of mixtapes. We put out 4, 5, 6 mixtapes a year. We would drop 60 to 100 songs a year,
wow.
and that gave us a feedback loop, and it allowed us to build a fan base, and it allowed us to test new sounds, and hip-hop lost that. There is no mixtapes anymore. Everything runs through record labels,
yeah.
and if it runs through the record label, it makes it very hard for hip-hop to find new sounds. So hip-hop lost its way. Back in 2018, 70% of top 100 songs were hip-hop records. 70.
Wow.
The biggest genre that ever existed before then was obviously pop music.
Right.
And their market share was 51%.
Right.
And then hip-hop came in and did 70% market share. It was the biggest genre that ever existed in history.
Mm-hmm.
In 2018.
There is a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5 where purpose and grit and the American spirit come together in the Peace Corps. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. And the love part is knowing your hard work can transform lives and build bridges across cultures. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. That's peacecorps.gov/serve. What if I told you that the idea that you only get parasites when you travel to some exotic country is flat wrong? Millions of Americans carry parasites right now, often without symptoms. For example, it's estimated that millions in the United States have been exposed to Toxocara, a parasitic worm, yet most never even know it. Parasites do not need a plane ticket. They can enter through tap water, sushi, undercooked foods, or contaminated produce. Some strains live in all stages, eggs, larvae, adults, hidden in your gut, releasing toxins that sabotage your energy and digestion. That's why I'm excited about Parify, Kim Rogers' 30-day full-spectrum parasite cleanse. The kit works by clearing parasites, worms, candida, and heavy metals, targeting parasites in all life stages, supporting gut health, detox pathways, and toxin removal. It's taken orally, daily, for 30 days, with precise dosing. I'm actually doing it myself right now. I started with the lymph cleanse, then I'm doing the Parify. Want to dive deep? I did a full interview with Kim Rogers, the worm queen herself, where we expose all the myths, understand the facts, and show how to protect your body. Listen to that episode if you haven't already. Meanwhile, go to rogershood.com and use the code Rachel to get 10% off of your order. That's R-A-C-H-E-L for 10% off. Give it a try. Maybe your body's missing link is hiding inside. Let's do this together. Again, it's rogershood.com, R-O-G-E-R-S-H-O-O-D.com, and use the code Rachel for 10% off. Who are the biggest stars then? Recording artist then?
Now?
No, then, in 2018.
Drake, I mean, everybody. Cardi B, like, I mean, it's just...
Got it.
Everybody
so is
killing
yeah.
it. Migos, I mean, it's just a very, just like cranking out, like
right.
artists left and right. But why? All these artists got to practice testing sounds without their career coming to an end.
Got
Today,
it.
If you want to experiment, your career might be over.
Right.
So if I were to come in the game, I would come in the game and I would bring mixtapes back. I would get things away from Spotify. I would actually have a mixtape streaming platform, and I would team up with the record labels and agree to let their artists go experiment without suing them.
Mm.
Let them put out free music. The fans want to listen to it.
Yeah.
I open a Spotify app, I open another app. Like if Future's putting out a mixtape, I'm going to go wherever he releases it.
Right.
So that's what I would do. So
I love that. Who's your favorite artist right now?
Um They're not new. It's a group. It's like a folk group called like the Strumbellas. I love the Strumbellas. I span like all, like my favorite hip hop artist is Young Dolph, was one of my artists. He passed away. Rest in peace, Young Dolph. But like I listen to a whole, I love Noah Kahan. I love like indie folk. I love hip hop, like trap hip hop. So yeah, I kind of span a wide range.
Right. Same topic, but not in, you know, hip hop. What are your thoughts on why Taylor Swift has become the biggest pop star, country star? I don't know what she's considered now, but the fact that she did so well on the Eras tour, like, did that stand out to you as though, oh, she's doing something different than everybody else? I mean,
it's a culmination. One, she made better music, so like we can't ignore that. Like, I think most all people want to credit her as a marketing genius. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can do all the marketing all you want. Like, if the music's not good, well, you can market all you want.
Yeah, right.
So I don't even emphasize the marketing side of Taylor Swift. They have made every move correctly.
Yeah.
Up until I didn't like this last album. I didn't like the last two albums.
Right.
I think thoughts about like how some artists lose touch. Mm. We signed up for something, but a lot of artists do feel like it's their life. You're going to have to do what I like, but I believe artists need to provide a good service.
Right.
So it's not what you want. It's what we want.
Right.
I'm kind of the opposite of how artists think. I believe that you need to understand that, like, if we want fairy tale from you, you got to give us fairy tale.
Right.
Like, that's what we want.
Yeah.
Serve it. Obviously, her fans love her. Yeah. But I think why she's...
Well, she's giving the real life fairy tale now that she's with Travis.
Album didn't sound like it.
No, I get it. I get it.
The photo shoot looked like it.
Yeah.
We want the song to sound like that photo.
Right.
We want the whole album to sound like that photo. Yeah. But that's how she built her whole career, was off of that photo, but in music.
Yeah.
But the album, to me, is like, I don't like it.
Fell short. Okay, let's go back to you. So you lose 150 pounds.
120.
120, okay. You get yourself healthier.
Yes.
They tell you your brain tumor is shrinking. What are
shrunk.
They? Shrunk completely at this point.
Yes.
Okay. And then all of a sudden you're like, I can be an athlete.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us that story. Tell us what happened there.
Well, I wanted to be a Nike athlete specifically. And I was training for an Ironman in New Zealand. I had already ran 3 marathons.
Wow.
I'm losing weight. And now I have this like vision. I want to bike across America. And in order to be a Nike athlete, it's probably the most unrealistic thing ever for like a 30-year-old white male that's not playing for the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to do it?
Yeah.
So I did something crazy. I kind of manifested it. It was all insane how it came together. But I would write down in my notebook every day, I'm going to be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. And so I'm seeing this dream, like delusionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually believe it's going to happen. I'll tell my friends, I'll tell my mom, I'll tell everybody, like, I'm going to be a Nike athlete. And I needed a way to get their attention. And emailing them, that's not big enough. Like,
right.
Anytime I want something in life, I believe in my cannonball theory. I believe bigger is easier. And I believe cannonballing is how you make a wave.
Mm-hmm.
Where most times you do something big and scary, you put your, like, pinky toe in the pool, and it might send a little tiny ripple, but if I cannonball, it sends a wave.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I send a wave out, I need it to come back. With the pinky toe, that wave's not coming back.
Yeah.
Cannonball goes out, and I need Nike to come back.
Is there a fear of rejection anytime you do something like that?
No.
Why?
Because I know it's going to work. I brainwashed myself. Like, that's the thing. Like, it's like, drink your Kool-Aid. Like, seriously, like, Nike's going to see my fan-made Nike commercial. Nike's going to like it. Nike's going to sign me, and I'm going to be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. It's going to be easy. This is how I talk to myself. This is how I write in my notebook.
So you made a video.
Yep.
And you, like, produced a short film, short ad. What was it?
Well, this is the thing. So I started calling my friends in Hollywood, and they all told me the same thing, and it really pissed me off. They kept telling me, you need to be realistic. Because I'm like, I don't feel like spending $200,000 on this. I'm not that rich to spend $200,000 on an Instagram video, like a clip that's going on my Instagram.
Yeah.
But they're like, Charlie, what do you want? I was like, I want a Nike commercial. Like, I need Nike to see it and be like, we could just take this right now and put it on TV.
Right.
They're like, Charlie, that's $200,000. I was like, I need to find somebody who can do that for like a few grand. They're like, Charlie, be realistic. I'm like, don't tell me to be realistic. I know somebody can do it. And they're like, Charlie, you need like Hans Zimmer strings if you want it to be like emotional. Mm-hmm. Like that's expensive. You're not going to find that on Epidemic Sounds. You need the equipment. You need a 10-person team. You need an editor. You need a score. You need somebody to mix and master the audio. We're not talking about an Instagram clip here. We're talking about a Nike commercial. Mm-hmm. You need to be realistic. I said, don't tell me to be realistic. I'm going to find somebody. And so I'm in my living room writing in my Quantum Possibilities manifestation notebook. Like I told you, I'm delusional. There's a reason why all my dreams come true. Mm-hmm. If anybody's listening to this and be like, this guy's crazy, I'm like, if what you're doing is not working, just try this. Mm-hmm. Try the crazy way because it works for me. I'm writing in my notebook, today is the day I search and found my videographer / editor. It's done, exclamation mark. It's easy, exclamation mark. And on that same page, I'm like, I'm going to be the face of Nike. I'm going to be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams. I'm writing my dreams down. Mm-hmm. My roommate walks in the front door, mind you. I have a roommate. I left the music industry. I don't know if I'm ever going to make money again. I'm living in a house with three other people. Like, I've never done that in my life. I've been technically very successful since I was 18. Mm-hmm. I'm living in a house with three other people, and my roommate walks in, and behind him is this guy with this huge Steadicam rig. Now, you might be thinking my roommate's in the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. He's not. He is a business development department for a goji berry company. And he's like, does office work.
Right.
And he has this like movie director guy behind him with all this stuff on the Steadicam rig that takes both of his hands. I'm looking at him. I'm looking at my notebook. And I'm like, is this my fairy tale magical moment? Mm-hmm. I just wrote it down. And then this guy walks in. I ask him, I said, do you do videos? And the first thing out of his mouth, my heart sunk. He's like, yeah, I do videos, but nobody ever pays me. I'm like, oh God, this was not my dream come true moment. Mm-hmm. I was like, what do you mean nobody ever pays you? He's like, well, I'm only doing this one because it was a Lamborghini at the other set. And I'm like, Morgan, what's going on here? It's like my friend Manny called, wants to shoot something for his Airbnb business. So he sent this guy over. He just met him like 3 minutes earlier. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, can I see some of your work? I'm like, not that hopeful at this point. And he looks like a dark cloud. He looks like he's in Fallout Boy. He has like the hair, the black, everything. And I was like, can I see your website? He's like, I haven't updated in like 7 years. I'm like, oh, great. I open his website and there was like a short film on there. I was like, holy shit. This is good. Like, did you shoot this? He said, yeah, I shot it. I said, who owned all the equipment? Because the person who shoots probably doesn't own all the equipment. They rent it or have to get it from a supply house. He said, well, I'm kind of like a hoarder. Like, I own all my own lighting, cameras, dolly tracks, steady cameras, anamorphic lenses, cinematic lenses, this lens, that lens. I'm like, hold on. You have all of that? He said, yeah. I said, who edited it? Because in film, the person who shoots never edits. Mm-hmm. He said, well, I edited it. I said, who made the music? Because the person who shoots never makes music. I'm not talking about one person in history. He said, well, I used to be in a rock band and we were on the Warped Tour 15 years ago and we had a record deal, but the record label dropped us. I was like, hold on. You made the music? I said, who color graded it? I color graded it. I said, who mixed and mastered the audio? I have a studio in my bedroom. I do all the mix. I'm like, you did everything. I said, listen, look at my notebook. I said, you and I are going to make a fan-made Nike commercial. Nike's going to see it, and Nike's going to want to sign me. He said, dude, you're crazy. I said, I know. I sat down with him. I said, this is my vision. Mm-hmm. He started storyboarding it, and he drew all these pictures.
It. So he was good. He understood your vision. It. Yeah.
And I asked him, how much is it going to cost? He said, $660. I said, excuse me? $660.
Let's
Why?
Go.
He said, I need a 10-foot PVC pipe with two belts because I need your feet to be the exact same distance from my camera at all times. And I'm going to have you run all throughout LA and the background's going to change. And I'm going to have you we're going to make this song out of your footsteps and your breath. And then I'm going to do the strings and it's going to be like Hans Zimmer. And I'm like, oh my God, like I manifested this. I literally 24 hours after sitting down with a Hollywood producer who pissed me off and he told me to be realistic. And I told him, don't ever tell me to be realistic. I am going to find this guy. And I'm writing in my notebook, today is the day I found him. And then he walks in my front door. Anybody who says these words, nobody's coming to save you. Very popular online thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's a goddamn lie. I expect people to come save me. That's why they do. I would never in a million years speak the words, nobody's coming to save me. I actually expect it. I'm writing it. This is going to happen. And we made a fan-made Nike commercial. And everything I said was going to happen, happened. We uploaded it. 3 days later, Nike calls me. They fly me to campus. They walk me into a conference room. They said, Charlie, we are going to change the direction of our company because of this film. And what they showed me what's going to become the biggest Nike commercial in Nike history, the Colin Kaepernick commercial. And it had myself, LeBron James, Serena Williams, and it was a Super Bowl commercial. I got to be on the cover of Runner's World magazine. I got to be a Nike athlete, and all my dreams came true. And everybody who thought I was crazy or delusional, they don't think I'm crazy or delusional anymore.
And what happened to this guy that helped you?
Oh, he's gone on to be so successful. He's making so much money. He's such a talent.
Amazing.
Yeah, so.
So isn't that amazing, though, that you are able to also, while these people are saving you, you're also saving them. I mean, you brought out this creativity in this guy. It sounded like when he walked through the door, he was low on energy, low on confidence, and you gave it to him, and here he is successful, which is kind of what you do now in a bigger in a bigger way, which is fantastic. All right, so that happened. That must have felt like you were on the top of the world.
Yes.
So how do you find your next dream after that?
Well, I kind of listen to my heart.
Okay.
So I've been very fortunate to allow my heart to, how do I say this? I've been very fortunate to keep my heart off of Do Not Disturb.
Mm-hmm.
What do I mean by that? Most all of us, we get scarred.
Mm-hmm.
And we silence our hearts because life is hard and it gets scarred and scarred and scarred. We hope for things, but life is hard. And I'll give you an example of how we get scarred. When you first got a cell phone, did you have a ringtone?
God, I don't remember. I mean, yeah, it must have come with a ringtone. Yeah.
Right. But was it a song? Did you ever have a song?
I did.
You had a song one time.
Yeah.
And then you probably just had a standard ringtone.
Yeah.
And then you probably put it on vibrate at some point in your life, and it never came off of vibrate.
Right.
And now, how much time do you actually spend on Do Not Disturb?
Oh, gosh. It's on
a lot, right?
Yeah.
We got scarred by the notifications, so we shut down our phones from making notifications.
Mm.
Our hearts, when we were young, we wanted, it was open, it was on, and then it gets scarred, and it shuts down. So when we get a calling, we can't answer. My heart is open. So when my eyes light up at something, I'm able to actually answer the calling because I heard it. I didn't shut my heart down. So if anybody's watching this, like, we got to get back here and out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Our hearts have dreams. And so in this time, when all my dreams came true, my heart said, go help kids with cancer. I sold 3 of my 4 houses. I started giving all my money away. I moved into my bus and I started going across the country, and we're making dreams come true.
Wait, so did this bus start as the dream machine?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay, so you bought it with that intention.
Yeah.
So you got rid of all your materialistic things and you decided to drive across the country.
Absolutely.
And how did you pick the kids that you were helping?
The ones that needed a miracle.
Did they eventually write into you when they saw?
We find them. They don't know we're coming.
Oh, wow.
They don't ever know we're coming. We find them.
Wow.
And when we show up, they have no idea who we are.
And you were finding them from social media? Were you calling hospitals? Like, how did that work?
Hospitals, churches, boys and girls clubs. We searched the internet.
A team of people that it was their job.
It started off.
You would
it started off with me and a small team, and then the team grew. And we got really good at what we did. And we grew to 9 million followers on social media. The internet started falling in love with what we do. And now we help 7 kids a month. And we keep our foundation very boutique because when we adopt a kid into our family, like, we're there for their birthdays. We're there for the families because a lot of times these kids, like, they might have cancer, but, like, the mom is being abused. And, like, she needs to get out of the house and needs a place to live. So we fundraise and we get her house. Like, we never leave the family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they need us, we're always going to be there for them. So we keep our nonprofit very small. Like if one of our kids passes away, like we're at the funeral. Like we keep it a small family. Wow. So we help 7 kids a month. And it's something I love and I'll do for the rest of my life.
And so has there ever, well, I'm sure there's one that stands out to you.
Mm-hmm.
Was there the best time you've ever had doing it? Tell me.
Okay. There was this little girl named Lila. She loved pigs, and she made little pig cookies. She was a little baker, and she had a very rare disease called CRPS. And CRPS is called the suicide's disease because it's so much pain. So you ever had like pins and needles in your leg?
Yeah, of course.
But it never goes away.
Oh.
And so you can just imagine what it's like living with that. So we go to meet her.
How old?
She's 8 at the time. Okay. We go to meet her, and we ask her her dream. And she was selling cookies to try to save up for this treatment that insurance doesn't cover, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. A little girl having to, save up for a treatment. Mom got a second job selling hot dogs at the stadium. Father is a veteran and a school teacher. Family's trying to do everything they can to get this treatment that will maybe reduce the pain, but it cost a lot. Mm-hmm. It's like a $90,000 treatment. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, okay, I believe somebody's dream is the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that somebody's problem can be a gift for them. I don't look at problems as problems. I look at problems as opportunities. So it's like, okay, she sells cookies. What if we built her a cookie business? So we have her design her Flying Pig cookies. We built her a website, a logo, and we threw her a pop-up. And 10,000 people showed up for a pop-up. The community, we've known her for 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And we put all this together. 6 days later, 10,000 people showed up at her pop-up bakery.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 days after that, we're launching the website. We sold 200,000 cookies in 48 hours.
Wow.
She made $500,000, was able to afford her treatment. And that was one of the most fun experiences. And we did everything in 10 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how is she now?
She's doing better. She's still in pain.
Okay.
She is in high school. She just went to the prom. She had a little date. It was adorable. Her name is Lila. If you want to look her up on Instagram, it's Lila's Dream Bakery.
Amazing. And she still has the bakery? She still does the cookies?
She still bakes. She doesn't run the business.
Okay.
It's a lot. But she does do her baking every day.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right. I want to go back to a couple of things you were talking about. You talked about how you had a quantum notebook.
Yeah.
I want people to hear some, I know people listening are stuck in something.
Yeah.
You know, everyone gets stuck, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of things that are really good, tips from you, that
mm-hmm.
are tangible things that people can do.
Yes.
And I want to talk about that, and then I want to talk about the winning streak.
Yeah.
So both of those things, let's get into.
Okay, so I kind of have my own proprietary method,
mm-hmm.
let's say, or framework on how I approach a day to one, just be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is most of us are going through a lot of shit.
Mm-hmm.
The number one thing I have to do before I even dream, before I even manifest, is I have to feel like a winner. And I'll give you an example. Have you ever been to Las Vegas?
Yeah, I used to live there.
Have you ever been to a casino with a couple girlfriends?
Of course.
Okay. Let's say you and two girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
One of the girlfriends is winning
mm-hmm.
back to back. And there's this energy that's surrounding her.
Mm-hmm.
And people are hey, and she just keeps winning. And then another one of your friends is losing,
mm-hmm.
Every time. And people are allergic to that person. Be like, I almost don't even want to be near you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What a difference that is. So winning is attractive,
mm-hmm.
but attractive, not just visual, attractive. People are attracted to a winner.
Mm-hmm.
And then losing is bad things just keep happening. Nobody wants to be around you. Okay. So that's how I look at a day when I wake up.
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to win today or am I going to lose today? Well, I don't want to rely on some outside force for me to win. That's I don't need a good email to feel like a winner.
Right.
I go to Starbucks and I buy my double shot of espresso on ice with a splash of almond milk and 2 raw sugars. And it's $3, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is less than a latte winning streak. I'm going to lose a little bit of weight because it's way less almond milk. Okay, because I just did a splash, so I'm going to lose weight. Winning streak. And then that's a lot of happiness for $3. Mm-hmm. Some people need like Louis Vuitton or like a Lamborghini for happiness. This cup, honestly, my swing from how I feel now to after I take my first sip, I'm going to be happy. This is a winning streak. This is my first winning streak of the day. Mm-hmm. And then when you start a winning streak, you just got to find some more. Okay, I got the green light, winning streak. I got the red light. I got to spend more time with my girlfriend. Winning streak. Mm-hmm. I go to the grocery store. Good parking spot. Winning streak. Bad parking spot. I get more steps in. Winning streak. So now I'm practicing finding wins in any situation. Mm-hmm. And when you get to like 10 or 15 or 20 wins in a short period of time, my mom called me. She's alive. Like, thank God. Like, that's a win. My mom being alive is a win. Me waking up this morning is a win. Mm-hmm. Okay, like, I really like my car. That's a win. And now I start looking for these wins. So my energy is different. Mm-hmm. I'm becoming more attractive. When I'm talking to people, they're like, I love your energy. Becoming attractive, mm-hmm. like the friend in Vegas who's winning. Mm-hmm. You become attractive. Things start attractive. So now that I've got my energy like that, I'm on a winning streak. And like, if you like sports and your team has won 22 games in a row, your only thing you could think about is 23. Mm-hmm. So now I'm just looking for wins. I'm just trying to rack them up. So now I'm going to start manifesting because I have confidence. I have proof I'm a winner. Mm-hmm. Now, there's an opposite way of this. Oh, it's going to be one of those days. Oh, God, bad email. Like, I just can't take this stress anymore. Like, oh, fucking red light. You know, like the parking spot. Like, it's like paranoia and pronoia.
Yeah.
Paranoia is universe is conspiring against me. You stump your toe. You're like, oh, it's going to be one of those days. You are literally saying what the day is going to be. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's going to be one of those days. Pronoia, the universe is conspiring for me. Stump my toe. You know what? Maybe this is good. Maybe I need to slow down. Mm. You know what? Maybe I need to do some yoga. Maybe this is a sign from the universe. I'm moving too fast. You see what I'm saying? You start brainwashing yourself.
Your mindset.
Mm-hmm. Pronoia is the universe is conspiring for me. So now I'm ready to go manifest. And I'm going ready to dream. First thing I do is I wonder what's lighting my heart up. Not my brain. My heart. What's lighting my heart up? My heart lit up a few times in my life. Mm-hmm. I want to be a Nike athlete. I closed my eyes and I saw something. I saw a commercial. But people always say, like, if I see it, I'll believe it. Mm-hmm. But they mean that in a way with their eyes open.
Yeah.
I say, if I see it, I'll believe it. But my eyes don't need to be open to see. I can see something. Like, I have a dream. Like, I didn't choose that. I really didn't. It was in me. Mm-hmm. People will say the craziest thing, and it doesn't need to make sense. It doesn't need to be logical. If it was for you, I was always meant to be an athlete. Does that mean play for the Lakers or the Olympics? For me, no. It just meant I needed to go be 300 pounds, have a brain tumor, and now those things were gifts,
right?
Because that's why Nike liked me. Nike liked me, so now I can disarm anything bad in my life if I give gratitude to the things that are going bad.
Right.
Thank you, brain tumor. You made my dream come true.
Right.
So I don't believe anything bad happens. I believe we label it as bad. Now, you might be listening to this and be like, oh, this guy is only rainbows and butterflies. No. Mm-mm. I have extreme downs. Mm-hmm. I just want to get out of it.
Right.
So I throw my temper tantrum. I punch the steering wheel. I'll punch the pillow. I'll be mad. But my goal in life is to have fun. And staying there is not fun.
Right.
So I quickly get out of it.
You let yourself have that moment and then say, okay, shake it off.
Absolutely. Because it's not fun. I've seen people replay bad in their mind for years.
Right.
And they don't get out of it.
And is that what this quantum notebook is about? You're just writing the positive or things you see or things you hope for?
No. There's a step before that. That's a winning streak. I have to find a way for this loss and this loss equals a W. Mm-hmm. It's a lesson learned. But this is a W. So if I can find, like, okay, I got fired from Soulja Boy. Mm-hmm. Ma, this is the best thing that happened to me. This is a winning streak. Once I label it as a win and I start finding reasons why, I'm able to move on instantly. Mm-hmm. That's the step before you manifest. Once you feel confident and you close your eyes and you're feeling like things are possible because you have proof you're a winner, now you can start seeing positive things because that record isn't replaying over and over about that person who's giving you a hard time, that boss or the ex or this or that. So I do the winning streak first. Then I close my eyes to see what's lighting my heart up. And then I start writing delusionally as if everything is easy.
Be delusional.
And believe it's easy.
Yeah.
And then once you write it down, start speaking it to everybody. But be careful how you speak it, like how we said at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I speak it in such a confident way, I'm going to say exactly what's going to happen. Nike's going to see it. Nike's going to sign me, and I'm going to be in a commercial with LeBron James and Serena Williams to where people can't even have an opinion.
Okay. Do you think that that part of that, though, is like it's holding you accountable? Because Absolutely. You would be failing if you didn't make that happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Where are you on your health journey now?
I am stuck at the same weight for 3 years. And every day I wake up as a delusional optimist and I'm like, I'm going to figure out why my body is not losing weight because I'm definitely in a calorie deficit. I definitely exercise, but I have just, I guess, a lot of underlying issues. But I'm down here working with a sports scientist and we're doing extensive testing because I literally have a dream. And I don't give up until it happens. And when I did my Ironman, I lost 120 pounds. When I started my nonprofit, all the weight came back, but I never went back to eating bad. The stress, the hormones, the cortisol, the extra 400 calories I needed to deal with the stress, even though it's healthy.
Yeah.
400 calories in a salad. But that extra food, I gained 60 pounds.
Right.
I've lost 40 of it, but I'm still trying every day. So I'm on a health journey.
What are your thoughts on what everyone uses right now, like the GLP-1s and Ozempic? Is that not something for you?
You know, I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't lose any weight.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't enjoy it either. It didn't feel right.
Oh, so you felt sick from it.
Well, one, when you spend that much money and don't lose weight, it's like, and then you don't feel good at the same time. I'm like, all right.
Right. Not like, for you.
I tried.
Right. What's your dream now? What's your next big dream?
I'm dreaming up something really big. I'm writing a book. And for me, it's so exciting because it reminds me of like putting out an album.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I get to apply everything I've done my whole life. And like I'm dreaming big with it. So like my delusional like dreams with this is like I see a classic, right? And it's not going to have like a traditional cover like with the paper thing. It's going to be like a linen cover. You'll buy it at Target just as a coffee table book. It's going to look like a classic, right? And I know what the cover looks like. And I'm actually going to sell like 30 million copies. I've sold about 30 million records in my life. So I know what it's possible to sell 30 million. So I'm going to sell 30 million copies. And that's up there with like the classics.
And is it a memoir? Is it a self-help book?
It's a combo.
Okay.
So I'm a storyteller. So it's going to be story-based with lessons.
I love that.
So self-development, but very story-driven. The words that never come out of my mouth are, you should.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that type of person. I'm never going to tell somebody what they should do, but I have stories of what I've done and just what I would recommend.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have a name for it?
It's called Winning Streak, Mastering the Art of Delusional Optimism.
Oh, I love that.
Thank you.
That is going to do good. My last two questions for you have to do with what our show is, right?
Mm-hmm.
You misunderstood. And some people go through life feeling like they are reduced to a headline and they spend the whole rest of their life being on a mission to change their narrative in some way, shape, or form. For you, have you ever felt misunderstood?
Yeah.
Different parts of your life and what, you know, what got you through that and what do you feel about being misunderstood?
Misunderstood to me is kind of means you're on the right path in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
If I look at just stats of people who are like in a box, like the safe route, those aren't the people we read books about or listen to podcasts about. Like, so it's like if you are misunderstood, you're probably on the right path. Because I'm not even attempting to be understood. Like, I'm sitting here saying I'm delusional.
Right.
Like, nobody does that. Like, I'm sitting here saying I think it's going to be easy.
Yeah.
Where most everybody's like, you got to grind. It's going to be hard. I'm like, I would never say that. I don't want it to be hard.
Right.
Like, I am misunderstood But like maybe because I've accomplished things, people would be like, oh, I trust him. But I've always been like this, even before the bank account or the success or a follower on Instagram. And so that's easy to misunderstand that person. But if I find somebody like me that's different, I'm like, you're going somewhere.
I love that.
Yeah.
And for anyone that's listening that might be doubting themselves, can't find their purpose, can't figure it out, feel stuck, feels like a loser, mm-hmm. what would you say to them?
Well, the whole purpose thing, I think, is dangerous.
Mm. Why?
Because it's like...
Do you think purpose is different than a dream?
So, like, for me, for example, like, I was the manager for the basketball team in high school. Mm-hmm. Was that my, like, purpose? No, my purpose was to be an athlete. I just need to be close to it. But I wanted to do it excellent. So that means I have to sweep the floor at halftime in front of the whole school. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to do it with excellence. And then, is my purpose to be a cameraman for Soulja Boy? No, but I'm going to do it with excellence because it's going to lead me to something. Was my purpose to be a manager for rappers? Maybe. No, that's not my purpose, but I'm going to do it with excellence because it's going to lead to something else. And I'm going to keep collecting all these skill sets and all these tools. So I think people eliminate themselves from doing so much because they're like, it's not my purpose. Mm. I mean, I passed out CDs. I was the manager, right? Manager, you think of like an agent, Ari Gold, in the office with the suit. No, I'm passing out CDs like a street team. Is that my purpose? No, but I'm going to do it with excellence. Mm-hmm. And I just keep stacking all these skill sets because I wasn't worried about my purpose. I said, this is what I'm going to do. My heart wanted to try something. I'm going to be great at whatever I try. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm tired, I'm going to go do something else. Mm-hmm. And I'm think about like Forrest Gump. He was a fictional character. But like everything he did, he was excellent at. Mm-hmm. Ping pong. He was in the army. He was special. He was like special needs. But like everything he did, he had a shrimp company. Mm-hmm. He couldn't catch any shrimp. And then he figured out how to catch shrimp. And then it became a billion-dollar company. And then like ping pong, run across America. Like everybody wanted him to have a purpose for it. He's like, I just enjoy running.
Right.
Like if you want to do something, believe that it's your purpose right now, but it's okay to change. And it's okay, but I just see so many people eliminate themselves from action because they're waiting for this like purpose thing that's perfect. I was a cameraman. I was the lowest paid person on the team.
Yeah.
But that led me to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. And I'm still on my journey.
Right.
About to write a book. What am I going to do after that? Am I going to be an author the rest of my life? Hell no. I'm going to have another dream after that.
Right.
And I'm going to do that.
And just quickly, I want your thoughts on the importance of failing and figuring out what you're not good at or, mm-hmm. or seeing the bottom of the barrel. Because mm-hmm. in my experience, I feel like, you know, I don't take advice from anyone who hasn't, you know, had a rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for someone to know how to get out of those times. You don't want to hear just about the good times. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's important?
Yeah. I love failing. I mean, it's not fun right. in the moment. But I kind of enjoy the video game of it all.
Mm.
So, like, if people like video games, I don't play video games, but people like video games because it has a challenge aspect to it.
Yeah.
So I just look at it as a video game. If you sat there and played a video game long enough, you will get to the next level. But how many times are you going to die? That's just part of the game.
Right.
Like, so me as a businessman, like, I failed. Like, I've been failed, like, more businesses than I've succeeded. I've been fired many, many times. I've had bad business situations, and I just, it's a video game. You're
but
supposed
I love
to die.
That you say that because that analogy, it reminds me of Donkey Kong or something. And when you get to that point where you always die,
mm-hmm.
the more you do it, you keep realizing, oh, wait, I know how to get around this now. I know how mm-hmm. to do that jump higher, whatever it is. And so the failing is what teaches you how to have the guts to keep that, make that jump, do it differently, change some things. And so I think people forget that's the lesson in the failing.
People get to the point where they die in Donkey Kong and they become paranoid. Universe is conspiring against me. I get to the Donkey Kong. Oh, what a gift. Now I know not to do that. I just look at it as a win instead of a loss.
Right.
You change that one little hack in your life, everything becomes an opportunity. Watch how far you'll go.
Yeah. That winning streak is such a powerful line sentence. I know people have had it tattooed on them.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be your book. I love it. Tell our listeners where they can learn more about you, find out more about your companies, rattle them off really quick so they can find you.
You can find me on the internet. I have, if you want to support our mission, mm-hmm. please go buy Once Upon a Coconut. It's our coconut water company. It's how we fund so many of the dreams that we do. It's in Sprouts. It's in Whole Foods. It's in a lot of stores. And we're growing every day.
Amazing. And you, your Instagram, tell them what it is.
At Charlie.
At Charlie. Wow. Of all the names.
I know.
Amazing. You're the best. It's been such an honor. I wish you the best of luck. And I can't wait to see what lies ahead for you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
How far did we go over?
Good. I'm sure.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.